Chapter 15. The serpents were having a frolic in the sunlight out past the edge of the harbour and where the water was dark and deeper. One could see them even from the shore as their shining curves breached the waves and plunged again, glittering with scales and their golden nets. There were a great many of them, 30 perhaps, although they were difficult to count, and would not stop to even try and talk when Temeraire had flown over to speak with them. "They do not seem to care for anything but fish and swimming," he said, landing again, discouraged, at the pavilion. "I don't see what else you expected," Caesar said. "My captain says they are a menace to shipping, and they will get themselves caught in fishing nets and break them, which oughtn't be hard to miss if they were not very dull fellows." The pavilion was now the scene of many and intense negotiations among the various captains and Jia Zhen, as well as his lesser officials, who it seemed were responsible for working out the various arrangements, and then presenting them for his final approval. The rows and rows of containers upon the shore had been opened up for inspection, very like, Temeraire thought wistfully, heaps of splendid gifts arrayed for one's delight. It was a little saddening to think they should all very shortly be going away, and one might not keep any of them, although he was well aware this could only be classed as rampant greed, when he had already come out of their visit with so much good fortune. No one, he felt, could deny that Lawrence had been by far the most gorgeously arrayed of anyone present the evening before, and the exquisite robes, at Temeraire's suggestion, he did not find that Lawrence was quite so careful of his clothing any more as one might really wish, had now been packed away in oilcloth and in some scraps of silk, and were in a box among Temeraire's own things, safe and protected. He would have even been very happy to possess one of the sea boxes quite empty, and had sniffed them over several times to make a note of their design. They were so very ingeniously crafted that they had scarcely leaked all the long way from China. On both top and bottom, a sequence of long wooden lips and trenches interlocked with one another, and these had been lined with pale, creamy beeswax. It was indeed quite a struggle to open them at all. Temeraire had been only too pleased to oblige with a little assistance, and even he had found it hard going to work his talon tips into the notches and lever the two halves apart. Some few seals had failed, but only perhaps three of the lot, and two of these contained porcelain, which was only dampened and not spoilt. Although it made for tedious work to take out each piece and inspect it and dry it again, Temeraire could not be sorry in the least, as he and Ischiaca and Caesar and Kulingile and Tarunka might all sit at the edge of the pavilion and watch each lovely glowing piece come out, to be wiped and set out upon cloths upon the mowed grassy verge, in the sunlight. And there were hundreds and hundreds of the pieces to be seen. They were crowded, though, and at first they were distracted by a little squabbling among the little dragons. Caesar was still the largest of those three, but Kulingile had eaten nearly four times as much last night, with all that Caesar had been able to do, and was not so very far off. And Tarunka, who, of course, was still very small, had the very reasonable contention that as this was in her country, the pavilion was more nearly hers than anyone else's, and so she ought to have the best place.
"I do not see why you must all make such a fuss," Ischiaca said impatiently. "And look, they are bringing out some platters. That one could hold an entire cow."
"Oh, oh, how marvellous!" Temeraire cried.
It was painted with a great phoenix, in yellow and green. Of course it would have been the very pity of the world if it had been hurt in any way, but Temeraire did wonder if, perhaps, the salt water had faded the colour a little, whether they might decide it could not be sold after all, and they might as well put it aside.
"That is enough," he said to the squabbling, turning his head. "Tarunka, you shall come and sit between Ischiaca and me up on the steps, and Kulingile you may sit upon me, if you are not floating any more."
"Which I am very glad to see," Ischiaca put in, "as it is not reasonable and looks very strange."
"Even if you are not floating. Anyway, you are still very light. One would hardly know you were there,"
Temeraire finished.
"And there is no reason, Caesar, why you cannot fit on Ischiaca's other side. If I should turn myself a little so Kulingile can see, and then Ischiaca sit straight back. But I must say it is time you gave over pretending Kulingile is not going to be bigger."
Harmony thus re-established, they might all enjoy the remainder of the spectacle as it unfolded before them. There were even some plates, which had gold upon their rims, so they flashed in the sunlight, and Temeraire did not even mind Ischiaca sighing damply. It was impossible to blame her.
"I should like the whole set," she said, "and I should eat off them every day."
"It doesn't seem to me that it is proper to get anything like that dirty," Tarunka said, and Temeraire was of her mind. But Ischiaca pointed out that the plate would be clean at first,
and when one had finished eating one's food it would be cleaned again, so one would have all the pleasure of seeing it cleaned fresh every day, and also of having it uncovered little by little as you ate. This seemed almost excessively sybaritic, Temeraire thought, but after all it was plain the plates were intended for the purpose, and one ought to use them so if one were careful not to let them be broken. At last the plates were all dry and packed away again, this time in an ordinary crate. They were going to Holland, it seemed, or at least the Dutch captain was taking them away after some intense conversation with one of the officials, who consulted his records and shook his head a few times, and then at last reached a bargain. One of the chests, which had been kept under lock and key in the pavilion, was opened up, and oh, it was full to the brim of bars of gold, of which 10 were carefully counted out, and then each separately wrapped by the officials in paper. Another, with an inkpot and a brush, wrote upon them in large characters.
"What does that say?"
Iskierka said, craning, quite to no purpose, as she could not read a word even of English.
"It is a name," Temeraire said, squinting a little. "It says, the House of Jingdu, who I suppose is a merchant, and that this is the 3rd of 10 bars, in payment for the shipment of 500 pieces of porcelain."
And the bars were carefully wrapped again in oilcloth over and over, and set back into one of the other containers. He supposed those would be returned to China. Mostly the remaining porcelain was not unwrapped, to all their disappointment. Each piece was taken out wrapped in paper and shaken a little, and if no pieces came out they were put away into the new crates. A few did drop some shards and were opened up, and whichever piece had broken was put aside and marked down upon the accounts. But it was more melancholy than satisfying to only see the ones which were smashed. One of the floored containers, alas, had contained great bolts of silk. The leak had penetrated also into the oilcloth wrappings, and stained several of these wholly beyond repair, and Temeraire bowed his neck in wincing sorrow when they were lifted out and unrolled in the sunlight. Great, sprawling, white-crusted splotches all over the pale spring green and deep crimson bolts. But the officials only shrugged, philosophically, and put them aside in a heap with the rest of the ruined goods. A note was written and wrapped in oilcloth, to be set with the rest of the payments.